Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, April 14th, 2017. The time is 1:40 p.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this afternoon, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Himhoff.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Hughes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We should be joined shortly by Senator Michicki and Senator Olson. We have three items on today's agenda: SB 104, Education Curriculum; HB 49, Extension Board, Direct Midwives, Direct Entry Midwives; HB 141, Alaska Workforce Investment Board Funds. If I could direct Senator's attention to SB 104, Education Curriculum. The public hearing was open and closed on 4 April 10th, 2017. We have not discussed the fiscal notes yet. This is an act relating to the duties of the State Board of Education and Early Development and relating to school curriculum. Senator Bishop, could I have a motion on the amendment?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number one.
And it is a conceptual amendment. I'll object for purposes of discussion. Welcome, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Hutchinson, if you could identify yourself for the record and speak to amendment number one, conceptual amendment number one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchinson, staff to Senator McKinnon. After meeting with the commissioner from the Department of Education, recommendations were made that would improve this legislation and make it one that the department can implement. Those changes are reflected in the amendments before you. These changes will also be helpful to the beginning steps of the Alaska Education Challenge. The three-year reprieve from curriculum review will be helpful to the Commissioner of Education in implementing the Alaska Education Challenge. It is the hope that this three-year reprieve will provide him time to work with districts in whatever capacity he needs. Going on the amendment, I'm going to do line 1. The amendment on line 1, line 7, and line 12 all relate to testing, and it has been determined that by the Department of Education that testing is not necessary to accomplish what the bill intends as part of curriculum review, so it has been removed from the legislation. The most important part of the curriculum review is a community buy-in, and with a public comment that will be taken at the State Board of Education, this will provide the necessary information for curriculum review. Going on to the amendment on line 4. Basically, what we did is we added the word currently to this section so that Department of Education would know that when they write the regulations, we're dealing with the curriculum that has been already approved from the 5 large school districts and 2 rural school districts. So we just added the word currently in there. And then going on the amendment on line 18, as a helpful step to the beginning of the Alaska Education Challenge, this section was requested by the department so that all school districts, teachers, parents, and community members can see what curriculum is being used by which school district. And Madam Chair, that is Amendment 1.
Are there questions on Amendment 1?
Madam Chair?
Senator Bishop.
I'd just like some, if there's somebody here from this deed,
Commissioner Johnson, could I ask you to come forward to the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, good afternoon. Help me understand why we're deleting the word test. Let me frame the questions. I'm sorry, ma'am.
Senator Bishop.
We talk a lot. We use a lot of statistics. And you and I have had conversations in the hallway as an example. Why aren't we using Accuplacer, the university, down in lower grade levels? So we can eliminate and hopefully have a goose egg on that remedial mathematics and science. So I'm not in the bubble that you live in, and I just want to make sure that I get a little concerned removing the word test. And can you just help me feel better? And
for the record, my name is Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, So when we talk about ACCUPLACER, we're talking about testing students, and as the bill was written, we were testing curriculum materials. Mm-hmm. And so those are two different things. We want to test our students to see if the curriculum material we're using is working for those students. We have tests in place to do that. Curriculum material, there's a number of different ways to vet the curriculum material. And so without using the word test, there'll still be a process for local school boards to vet that curriculum, making sure that it's quality curriculum, it meets their objectives, it's aligned to standards, those sorts of things.
Thank you. I'm fine with that answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Is there further questions on conceptual amendment number one? I'll withdraw my objection. Conceptual amendment number one is adopted. Commissioner, would you like to place on the record any comments regarding Senate Bill 104 as amended?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator McKinnon and Senate Finance Committee members. It's an honor to be here with each of you working together for Alaska students and their families. During this busy and consequential session, I especially thank you for dedicating a significant portion of the Senate Finance calendar to Alaska's system of public education. Collectively and individually, you have demonstrated that Alaska schools are important to you and the future of our state, and I thank you. I would also like to thank Brittany Hutchison, aide to Senator McKinnon. She has invested many, many hours in education policy, and it's getting harder and harder for me to keep up with her. Alaska's students will benefit from her dedication and commitment, so thank you, Brittany. Effective curriculum is one of the fundamental components of teaching students what we want them to know and do. Assisting districts by providing flexibility in the curriculum review process is particularly helpful during this time of necessary efficiencies. It is also helpful for Alaskan families to have more information about the curriculum materials adopted by their local school boards. And speaking of instruction, thank you for working with Governor Walker and the other chamber to develop a complete, forward-looking, sustainable fiscal plan. Bills like SB 104 remind us that student learning is important. The deliberations regarding Alaska's economic future are instructive. Students will learn by observing the final plan, and just as important, how you reach consensus on that plan. We as public servants must demonstrate the convictions and the character we expect of our students. That's a wonderful and amazing opportunity for each of us here today. So it's with great respect and gratitude to each of you that I look forward to more opportunities to support your work on behalf of Alaska students. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for the commissioner from the committee? We have to update the fiscal note, Senator Von Imhoff. We have not received a new fiscal note yet from the department as they relooked at the testing component. That's what the cost driver was before, and so we believe the fiscal note will look very different. If you're not in favor of advancing the bill today, we certainly can hold it and wait for them to update the fiscal note for us. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question that I have is not necessarily at this point the value of the fiscal note, Commissioner, but the second paragraph on the second page is that the Department of Education and Early Development would be required to review curricula used in other states and countries used by and by 2019 identify the best math and language arts curricula and best practices for teaching the curricula at each grade level for the state. So during the last time that this bill was presented before this committee, one of the questions I asked was when Alaska state standards were adopted by the state a few years ago, how much effort has been put into by DEED to develop new curriculum to meet the standards? And the response by your department was that it's been very difficult due to budget reductions, that the staffing necessary for this has been reduced, if not eliminated entirely. So can you address the challenges that your department may have following this process laid out in this fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, as we've had discussions, we've addressed that issue. And so I think the fiscal note reflects the need for some additional staff at the department to accomplish what the bill intends.
Okay. May I follow up, please?
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So the question that I have for you is, under the Department of Education, there is a line item called Program Administration and Operations with approximately 83 individuals as of for fiscal year 18. Can you describe what Program Administration and Operations is under DEED?
Commissioner, if we can invite, I believe that one of your staff is ready to come up and assist a little bit.
Yes, if I can invite Heidi Teschner and Paul Preston.
Thank you, Commissioner.
For the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services of the Department of Education, through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, sorry. Program Administration Operations is the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. So that is the group that handles the student loans, as well as the Alaska Performance Scholarship, as well as the Alaska Education Grants. So they are a corporation commission within Department of Education, but overall. Does that
follow up, Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair, I appreciate it. On amusing, I feel an order of priority that drafting, writing, reviewing curriculum, particularly in the light of the change a few years ago when we took the Alaska State Standards, would seem to be a priority. And the response that I received last time that budget cuts have eliminated that activity just felt very unsatisfactory to me in light of the curriculum is sort of the backbone of education. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Mr. Prusinger, do you have comments for the committee?
Yes, for the record, my name is Paul Preston. I'm the Acting Director for the Division of Student and Learning. And my prior comments were really around how we can assist districts in aligning the curriculum that they've already adopted to make sure that they're aligned to the new standards. The department, when we lost our math, science, and reading content specialist, lost that ability to assist districts in ensuring their adopted curriculum was aligned to the new standards. We made about a two-year effort before we lost those positions, so we made inroads to that. But we recognize it's important, but we never, the department has never been in the position to where we write curriculum for districts. We assist districts in their review to ensure that they're aligned to the standards.
Okay, thank you very much.
Do you know, this is Senator McKinnon, do you know how long it will take you to update the fiscal now?
Madam Chair, I'll have it to you by this afternoon.
Okay, then I'd like to set the bill aside because I personally am looking for a fiscal note that supports curriculum. And so if I don't see staffing that can support the ideas and concepts that we're trying to provide assistance for smaller communities and all on a volunteer basis, then we really can't accomplish what we need to accomplish. So we have to have someone that can go out and look at what's happening nationwide and work with school districts to see if we can provide some kind of support in pointing them on best practices and on curriculum that could be of value to them should they choose to adopt it. Senator Bishop.
Just a final comment, Madam
Please.
Chair. Just on the record, Commissioner Johnson, I'd really appreciate it if you'd double down on working with the president of the university so the math and sciences in the curricula as line as best they can because, again, we want to go to zero on remediation. Thank you.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question, perhaps I could ask you as the sponsor and then the department maybe might clarify, but there was some confusion in the prior committee on page 2, line 15, regarding the department making the curriculum available to all school districts and the cost of that if you're buying all the textbooks, all the materials for every single school district across the state is really a large expense. And whether that was the intention or was the intention that once it's approved that curriculum then becomes one of the options for the school districts and the school districts purchase it. Because I'm noticing in the fiscal note, in the final paragraph in the explanation, it says DEED must purchase curriculum for the 7 test districts as well as make approved curriculum available to all districts. So I just need clarification. Are we buying all the curriculum statewide for all the districts?
We are not.
Okay, thank you.
We are not. That was a misunderstanding between the department and reading the bill. Ms. Hutchinson, would you like to come up and comment further on that? And we have adopted a conceptual amendment that I believe may impact some of that.
Ms. Hutchinson. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchinson, staff to Senator McKinnon. And Senator Hughes, we will not be buying the curriculum. If the school district decides to use the curriculum that the Board of Education has adopted, they will then purchase the curriculum themselves.
Thank you.
Thank
Senator
you.
Hughes, follow up.
No, that clarifies it, because I think the department may have been confused in the prior committee, too. Thank you very much.
With that, Ms. Hutchinson.
Real brief. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to say that the Department of Education has been really helpful since it's been heard in Senate Education, and our communication was a little cross, but we're all on the same page now, and it's a smoother bill.
Thank you. With that, we'll set aside Senate Bill Number 104 and be anticipating a fiscal note shortly. I'd like to direct the committee's attention to HB 49, Extend Board of Direct Entry Midwives. Brief at ease. We're back on the record, still Senate Finance, still Friday, April 14th, 2017. The next bill before us is HB 49, an act extending the termination date of the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives and providing for an effective date. The document is /O and available online for the general public. I'd like to invite Representative Sam Keto and his staff, Crystal Keeneman, to the microphones to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For your information, my name is Sam Keto, Representative, District 33, Northern Southeast East Alaska, including downtown Juneau. And the bill before you, House Bill 49, is a basic sunset extension that provides an extension of the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives up through 2021 and this is the recommended length of extension from the legislative audit. And with that, we're able to answer any questions on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Keto. Are there questions from committee members? I would have a sectional walkthrough, Ms. Kieneman, but I think that we can read in 2017 to 2021, so we appreciate your support at the table. Thank you very much. I'd like to invite Chris Curtis, our legislative auditor, to the microphone to provide an overview of the audit.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. We did conduct an audit. I believe you all have a copy in your packet. It's dated April of 2016. The last time we conducted a sunset audit of this board was in 2014. And at that time, we found that Division of Corporation Business and Professional Licensing, DCBPL, investigative staff were not actively processing investigations that posed a public safety risk. After that audit was released, the board was extended only 2 years. At this point, we came in 2016, we found that the board was effectively licensing and regulating certified direct entry midwives and midwife apprentices. We recommend a 4-year extension. There are 3 recommendations. The first you'll find on page 10 of the audit. We recommend DCBPL management, in consultation with the board, increase licensing fees to address the board's deficit. In the 2014 audit, we identified a deficit of approximately $115,000. In March of 2016, the deficit had grown to over $183,000. Licensing fees were increased during that period, but the increases were not sufficient to cover the cost of the board, and the deficit grew. The second recommendation is also on page 10. We recommend DCBPL's director take steps to ensure license records are accurately recorded. Our testing did find 2 errors. In one instance, division staff had noted the wrong license was on probation in the online licensing database. In another instance, we found a consent agreement that had been approved by the board had the wrong year listed. Both of these instances could pose a public safety risk and were due to administrative error by DCBPL staff. And the final recommendation is on page 11, and this is an unusual recommendation for the division to make, as it is to the legislature. We recommend the legislature consider alternate forms of regulating the midwifery profession. And we make this recommendation in light of the board's deficit and the small number of licensees. At the time we conducted the audit, the DCBPL management was planning on increasing fees, and by the year 2020, they expected license fees for midwives to be approximately $4,000 and for apprentices to be $2,000. License fees at that level pose a barrier to entry into the occupation and could limit the number of new midwives coming into the profession and could result in midwives dropping out of the profession as they may not be able to afford the license fee. So we make this recommendation, and the recommendation 3 suggests 2 alternate boards for merging midwives with. We suggest the Board of Nursing or the Medical Board, as the current board structure does include a licensed physician and a certified nurse midwife. Department's response to the audit is on page 21. The department concurs with recommendations 1 and 2. Recommendation 3, they have no position but do acknowledge that merging the board with a similar board would result in improving the fiscal outlook. The board's position or response to the audit is on page 23. The board chair concurs with recommendations 1 and 2, and they strongly disagree with recommendation number 3. And they do raise valid concerns. Midwifery, they state, is a unique profession, and they believe that other boards would have a very difficult time in regulating the profession. They also point out that these 2 boards may be viewed as being in competition with midwives, and they fear being regulated out of practice. And they also state that they do not believe either of these boards would want midwives sitting on their board and having any impact on regulating their industry. So very valid concerns.
Are there questions from committee members on the audit? Senator Olson, I would like to welcome Senator Olson and Senator Machicki, who have been here for some time. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What was the reason for the large amount of deficits, and why was it not going?
Senator Olson, through the chair, this board has struggled with investigative fees, and that has been the main driver of the deficit over the years. And it is not a new problem for the board. We have continuously seen deficits and fluctuating fees.
Madam Chair, if I could continue. Have there been many lawsuits related or for malpractice related to midwives?
Senator Olson, through the chair, how many would be considered a lot? We did in the last sunset audit identify there were four cases involving two individuals that were not moving forward, and that was taking a lot of investigative effort and resulting in costs. We don't typically go into detail on investigative cases.
Sure. Senator Olson?
To continue on with it, as you look at this, and certainly midwives play a key role here in the state of Alaska for many people that want to have them deliver their children. Have there been people that have actually dropped out because they couldn't either afford the insurance or they couldn't afford the licensing fees that are out there? Do you know?
Senator Olson, I think that would be a great question for the department, because I do know that there was a fee increase, and it would be interesting to know how that impacted the number of licensees.
Because the numbers that I see, they're up here starting to approach what I pay for a medical doctor's license. The last question, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
You talked about recommendation number three, which is the merger of the boards. Has that ever been done before in the state of Alaska or even elsewhere in the nation, where you merge boards to try and for economic reasons?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I know that boards have merged, not recently. Most of the boards we have been well established in their current form.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell us if the investigations that are underway or typically that they've undergone have been of licensed individuals? Are they investigating people who are fraudulently posing as midwives? Because my understanding is sometimes these costs are borne by the licensed individuals or paying for things by people that are not following the law and are not licensed.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, I'm not going to comment on their current caseload, but I can tell you over the past, it is a mixture of both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for our auditor? Ms. Curtis, thank you for joining us today. I'd like to invite Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director Chambers, if you could identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then if you have some comments regarding any of the questions that our senators have asked today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. The board, as Legislative Auditor Curtis mentioned, the department did concur with the first two findings from the legislative audit regarding administrative errors and fees. We have responded by increasing fees to $3,800 for fully authorized midwives, and then just under $2,000 for apprentices, which was at the request of the board to increase those fees. We haven't documented any departures from the industry because of the fees. However, it is a fairly new fee, and it may be that we just aren't getting that feedback. So there are maybe others who wish to testify that know some anecdotal stories. The board only has about 50 licensees. So in regards to the fees, we're seeing a economy of scale issue with both unlicensed practice in the last couple of fiscal years, we've had two issues of unlicensed activity and then several sort of standard of care investigations, which is what you would routinely see in investigations with a healthcare profession. So there is, to speak to Senator Hughes's question, there are definitely some of both. But as you know, statute does require industries to fully pay for themselves and receive no undesignated general fund. So with only 50 licensees bearing a fluctuating and unpredictable investigative cost, in addition to routine board expenses and licensure expenses and need the need for attorneys for regulations and so forth, it's not surprising that that would be a heavy burden for this small group.
Senator Olson, I'd like to recognize you as Dr. Olson. We start having discussions, and others in Alaska may not know that you have expertise to bring to bear on some of these topics that this committee values as well as the legislature in its entirety. So I just wanted to put that on the record that we that you come at this sometimes with a different perspective than the average senator might.
Thank you, Madam
Dr.
Chair.
Dr. Olson.
Mr. Chambers, there's 50 licensees. Does that include the apprentices as well, or just how many apprentices do you have of that 50?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, 50 is a round number, and I can get those numbers for you right here. Very small print. The latest numbers that were used for the fee analysis indicate that there are 43 fully licensed midwives and approximately just over 20 apprentices. Those numbers are slightly dated, but that is what we use for the fee analysis. So in that ballpark.
Last question, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
The investigations that are going on, are they amongst predominantly amongst the apprentices or the fully licensed midwives?
I, through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't have that information with me, but would be happy to follow up. The fully licensed midwives do have a fiduciary responsibility over apprentices, so any investigation of apprentice would by default include that midwife.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell us what the licensure fees are for physicians and nurse practitioners and perhaps physician assistants?
Ms. Chambers.
Yes, I am happy to, through the chair. Right now, we've got 43 licensing programs to thumb through here. So forgive me. Physicians at this time have a licensing fee of $300, and all of our fees are biennial. Physician assistants have a license fee of $200. Nurses are comparable, about just under $200. They do all have quite a few more licensees to spread the cost than the midwives do.
Senator Hughes.
And just follow up to that, because the midwives are paying so much more, and my understanding is they're willing to pay it. They're very passionate about their profession, and they've helped a lot of families with births. I just want to applaud them because, and point out that they are paying considerably more in order to do their work, and I just want to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Are there other questions for Ms. Chambers? Ms. Chambers.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to note, I'm not certain if the board chair, Deborah Schneider, has been able to call in, if she is waiting online. If she is not, I did.
We have her in the queue.
Perfect. I just wanted to let you know that some of the board's sentiments from previous testimony in case she wasn't able to. So thank you.
Ms. Chambers, many of us have been working on the issues with shortfalls in licensure fees for licensees in Alaska in some of these unique cases. Is there a way that the department can advance the concern that is listed, at least from the auditor, to either the presiding officers or to Labor and Commerce or the appropriate chairman for consideration in addressing? We've been working on this for 7 years already, and the bottom line is that if you want midwives, there is a liability that goes with that that sometimes exceeds the cost that we can collect over such a small group. For what we say in state statute is 100% recovery for their profession to be licensed in the state of Alaska. So we have a box with a low amount of licensees in that is very difficult. And as our auditor pointed out, the other boards that may seem similar to the auditor are very different once you get into the profession that they would prefer to not. As an example, the doctors and nurses, because of the volume of people that are actually licensed under those, have a positive number on the as far as their overall funds to manage their own investigations. And to take on a liability from another board by rolling them in does not seem fair to those other boards. So while we talked about operating reasons why the other licensees might not want to include midwives on their board, the other issues, there's an economic impact because the midwives are very independent, want to govern themselves, and could be assimilated, per se, into a larger board. And then there's the other board's perspective that the costs of the liability and the investigative costs that come with the midwives is not something that they should have to bear on their licensing fees. So someone needs to look at this again. If we think it's a valuable asset for the people of Alaska, which we do have a document that has been passed out called Medicaid Cost Savings 2015 that shows an incredible value to the people of Alaska in lowering health care costs for those births that access a midwife midwives versus going to a more formal facility like a hospital or something else. So we have a valuable service, but it's hard to spread the cost that it takes to license them over 50 folks. Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The resolution or the bill itself only deals with the extension, and we're struggling with recommendation number 3. I think it may be something that this committee could ask the HES committee to look into, to come up with some form of recommendation in regards to this unusual recommendation, because I don't know if this committee is going to be able to resolve the question before the session ends.
Senator Hoffman, valid point. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chambers, how long did it take to build the operational deficit of $183,080? Do you know that?
I believe I have some numbers that could inform my response. The through the chair, Senator Machicki, I'm looking at the documentation going back several years, which we provide to the board on a quarterly basis. We have as far back as we typically kind of keep eyes on, this board has had a deficit in FY12. It had a deficit in of $65,000 and has remained in deficit, in fact, growing until just this last renewal cycle, the end of the second quarter of the fiscal year, where the deficit started to reduce as a result of the increased fees. Mm-hmm. So the deficit has been sustained for quite a while. I would like to say that in our analysis, which we've really spent a lot of time on internally as well as with the board, because they are very passionate and interested and willing to support the cost, we've seen that over a history of fee setting, fees were, for a reason unknown to anyone with the division, fees were dropped drastically in calendar year 2009, and that remained over 2010. So we don't know the rationale for the lowering of fees at that time, but that did drop the board into a deficit that I think that really kick-started at that point. And then due to the small number, and as we were mentioning, the volatility of investigative fees and other attorney fees incurred by the board, which is not forecastable because we are complaint-driven, it's a roller coaster. And I would like to acknowledge that Representative Quito has sponsored another bill currently making its way that would pool the investigative costs among all licensees. So everyone would pay a share, sort of like an insurance policy, pay a share, but each program wouldn't incur that ebb and flow or that cycle. So that is one thing that is out there that's being addressed.
Thank you. Senator Michiki.
That was actually going to be my question about separating the investigations arm on the various boards, but I just hearing all the concern about
whether... Senator Michiki, could you draw the microphone closer?
Yes. Just hearing all the concerns going forward, I just wonder if maybe 2021 is too long if we want to investigate this, but still allow the board to continue to operate for some time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. With that, we... Mr. Chambers, we do have people waiting online for public testimony. Senator Olson.
Just a comment and a short question. I do support midwives in keeping them independent because nobody likes to be overseen by somebody that doesn't have their same ideas. I guess one of the question I do have, though, do you have any projections on what it's going to be in the next 2 years or 4 years as far as the deficit goes? Is it on its way down, on its way up?
Thank you, through the chair. Senator Olson, we perform a fee analysis using a fairly sophisticated tool we've developed over the last few years to address some of the ongoing concerns about fee setting. And the projection that we used would keep the fee, assuming that the fees remain the same, would place the board out of deficit by the end of fiscal year 2021. And, of course, that's an estimate based on known information. If the expenses for the board were lower, then that could be achieved more quickly. If licensing numbers increased, it could be achieved more quickly. But the converse is true as well.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Ms. Chambers.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 49, Labor and Commerce. I'd like to go first to the Board of Midwives, Deborah Schneider. Deborah, are you there?
Hello, yes, this is Deborah Schneider. I'm currently the chair of the Certified Direct Entry Midwives. I'm a midwife. I've been licensed in the state of Alaska for almost 20 years now, and I practice both in Wasilla and Anchorage, and I'm here today to testify in support of the House Bill 49, the extension of the Board of Midwifery, and several of the comments that have been made are part of the reasons we have a unique board providing a unique service in a unique state. The midwives have consciously said we are going to deal with these issues and deal with our debt. We have been working very hard over the last several years to get several of these problems that have created these deficits under control, and I think we've made a lot of good progress, and our again hope is that we're going to be out of debt by 2021, and we are working with our midwives and students towards getting us licensed. People are coming into the profession knowing that there are high licensing fees, but that over the time that those should be able to come down. And so I just like to ask for your support of extending our board, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Deborah, thank you for your service on the Board of Midwives and testifying before Senate Finance today. Here in Juneau, we have Joanna Crossett. Joanna, are you here? If you come to the microphone, identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joanna Crossett, and I'm a direct entry midwife. I practice here in Juneau, and I'm testifying in support of House Bill 49. I appreciate the time and all of the questions today, and I'm open to questions myself.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for joining us. Senator Michiki has a question.
Ms. Crossett? Is that?
Yes, sir.
That's before you get away. Mm-hmm. Are you in agreement that midwives and all four of my children were born with midwives? She just retired, which happens to have occurred the same time my wife didn't have any children, so it worked out just fine. But are you in support of the board of licensees sort of catching up the deficit as well?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, yes, I am.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Do you feel it's, when is enough enough where it's going to be a hardship and the midwives would start to go the other way as far as membership? Because it appears they do a valuable service and a cost savings to the state, Medicaid.
Senator Bishop, through the chair. Initially, the proposed licensing fee was $4,700. That was the letter we got from the state back in July. So to have it reduced to $3,800, it felt a little bit better, but I think enough is enough now, and I'm hopeful that the House Bill 90 that was introduced by Sam Keto may be one possible solution.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. Next, here in Juneau, Maddie Nolan Grimes. Maddie, are you here? Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Maddie Nolan Grimes, and I'm a midwife as well as the director of our local birth center here in Juneau. I really want to thank you all for your time as session is kind of coming to a close to hear our bill today. So I speak wholeheartedly in support of House Bill 49 and extending our board and echo many of the statements that have been made by the department and our auditor and my colleague Johanna in our kind of addressing of the debt and getting us back in good standing. So, and I'm available for questions as well.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for waiting today. Hailing to my hometown, Susanna Tringwinger. Twillinger, sorry, Susan.
That's all right.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Terwilliger, and I'm a certified direct entry midwife. I'm also the president of the Midwives Association of Alaska. I do home birth only. My office is in Eagle River, and I do births from Anchorage to Wasilla, Palmer Valley. And I speak for the membership in wholehearted support of House Bill 49. We are indeed, as a group, committed to keeping our board. Well, I think we've had our board since 1993, and this membership works closely with the board because we are a small group of licensees, and it's we are committed. And I would also like to point out the. I came to Alaska and licensed in 2005, and so the licensing fees in 2006 were $2,088. And then in 2008, they dropped down to $500. And I do remember that there was a concern about such a dramatic drop, and the board was trying to keep the licensing fees at the rate that they already were. But that is, as was already alluded to, that was sort of the beginning of the problem. So I'm available for any questioning, but thank you all very much for taking this time to consider House Bill 49.
Thank you. Senator Michiki.
Thank you. Susanna, was that?
Susan.
Susan, thank you. Senator Machicki here. Just a quick question for you. Since you've been around in the industry so long, is the number of midwives increasing, decreasing, or is it fairly stable?
This last licensing time in December of 2016, I believe we've lost 13 certified direct entry midwives. I don't know the number about apprentices. I think that we didn't lose apprentices, that kind of stayed the same. Now, not all of those that did not relicense were because of the licensing fees. However, I know personal stories of a couple of them, and the amount of the fee did keep them from, they were new midwives, and it kept them from relicensing at this time, but they do hope to relicense sometime in the future. Other people had other situations change in their lives. However, had the licensing fee been reasonable in their minds, then they probably would have kept their license. But the $3,800 was a breaking point for some of them that were going to do other things anyway. So it's kind of hard to determine how much the increase played a factor in all of their decisions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Suzanne, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else off net, online, or in the room that would like to testify on House Bill number 49? Anyone at all? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, can we go through the fiscal note?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Fiscal note. In the previous fiscal note still applies. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The appropriation is corporations, businesses, and professional licensing. The allocation is corporations, businesses, and professional licensing. The OMB component number is 2360. The cost per year is $4,500. The analysis, professional licensing programs within the division of business and professional licensing are funded by receipt. Supported services, the fund source identifier is the 1156. Licensing fees for each occupation are set per AS 0801.065. So the total amount of revenue collected approximately equals the occupation's actual regulatory cost.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? Seeing and hearing none, brief at ease. We're back on the record. It's unusual for us to move a bill in a day. We have an extension bill, as Senator Hoffman said before us. The extension is for 4 years. We've heard from our auditor. We've heard from Division of Licensing. We know that this board has some work to do, but with your support, I would like to work with the department in looking at different ways that we might have to fill the problem that is here for the valuable folks that are participating in this and accessing it. Senator Bishop, can I have a motion?
Sure. Madam Chair, I move Senate CS for House Bill 49 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection to moving the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 49, Labor and Commerce, /O, an act extending the termination date of the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives and providing for an effective date? Seeing, hearing none, it moves. Brief at ease while you sign the documents. We're back on the record, Senate Finance, Friday, April 14, 2017. The next item before us is House Bill 141, Alaska Workforce Investment Board Funds. This is an act relating to the allocation of funding for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board and providing for an effective date. If I'd like to invite Representative Zach Fansler and Mary Aparzuk Schusler, staff to Representative Fansler. Mary, I hope you say your name more appropriately. I apologize. Representative Fansler, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Chair McKinnon. And for the record, my name is Zach Fansler. I'm the representative for District 38, which is the lower Kuskokwim, parts of the lower Yukon, and includes Bethel. And we're here today with my staff member.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mary Abachazuk-Schlosser, staff to Representative Fansler. And no worries about the name, Madam Chair.
Thanks.
First, let me thank you very much for hearing House Bill 141 today. We very much appreciate it. House Bill 141 is entitled An Act Relating to Allocations of Funding for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And what it really pertains to is the renewal of funding allocations for 10 programs through a program called the Technical and Vocational Education Program, which we refer to from here on out as TVEP. The purpose of this funding is to put Alaskans back to work and get them into the job market so that we have Alaskans working in the jobs that we have across our state. It's regionally aimed at 10 different institutions around the state, and those institutions concentrate mainly on teaching the skills that are needed to acquire jobs in that region. If I may, I'll just go through our 10 programs and their allocations under this bill. The first one is the University of Alaska, the statewide program, receives 45% of TVEP funding. The Galena Interior Learning Academy, based in Galena, receives 4% of the TVEP funds. The Alaska Technical Center in Kotzebue receives 9% of the TVEP funds. The Alaska Vocational Technical Center, AVTEC, based in Seward, receives 17% of TVEP funding. The Northwestern Alaskan Career and Technical Center, based in Nome, receives 3% of TVEP funds. The Southwest Alaska Vocational and Educational Center in King Salmon receives 3% of TVEP funding. Ute Iliknarivit Incorporated, the People's Learning Center, based in Bethel, receives 9% of TVEP funding. Partners for Progress in Delta Incorporated, based in Delta Junction, receives 3% of TVEP funds. Amundsen Educational Center in Soldotna receives 2% of TVEP funding, and Ilisavik College in Utqiagvik receives 5% of TVEP funds. The bill that you have in front of you right now is essentially a straight reauthorization for these 10 programs. The authorization for spending was set to expire, or is set to expire, June 30th, 2017. I believe you have the amended committee substitute from Labor and Commerce on the center, from the Senate side, and that is for a one-year renewal for this funding at these percentages. But I will note that originally the bill, as it left the House, included a five-year renewal for these programs. We very much believe that this is an imperative program to making sure that Alaskans can get trained so that they can go to work and that they can be an important and vital part of our economy, and that they can that way keep Alaskan dollars here in Alaska and therefore grow our economy, especially in these tough fiscal times. And I'm more than willing to take any questions or comments that the committee may have. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Fansler, does TVEC measure how many people obtain jobs after training and then how many keep those jobs a year later?
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator von Niemhoff. That's an excellent, excellent question. And yes, the answer is it does. Included in your packets, if I may, last year the program served over 10,000 Alaskans, and included in your packet should be what's entitled the Technical and Vocational Education Program Report. And on page 6 of that report, it gives a breakdown of the number of percentage of folks that each program served who were employed after 1 year after exit, and it discusses their median wages. What we tend to see is an instance here where these programs are very much working at getting people back into the workforce, and if I may steer just maybe to part of the point of your question, one of the discussion points that we have had is trying to find a universal reporting method so that we can compare all programs across the state, and we are very sympathetic to that idea. That is something that we completely understand, and one of the things that is our intention and my office will be working on is an upcoming program, the Governor's Alaska Education Challenge, and also a complete review of the vocational and technical education programs across the state. It's very much our inclination to make sure that we do set up a system where all groups are reporting so that we have a comparison of, as you might say, apples to apples rather than apples to oranges.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator McChickie? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You say, and I apologize, I haven't really followed this. I mean, I realize that there are a number of entities in my district that are get some help from this program, but I guess I haven't followed it that closely. But it left the House with a 5 year extension, and now there's a 1 year extension. What was the reason behind that?
Representative Fansler.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Olson, for that question. And I don't want to speak on behalf of the Labor and Commerce Committee out of turn in any way, shape, or form. But judging by the discussion that I observed, there was a concern about perhaps changing the reporting requirements and trying to make sure that we know that these programs are adequately serving and accomplishing the tasks that they want to accomplish. That I believe was probably the intention behind making a lower limit and lowering it down to 1 year. If I may offer a slight counterpoint to that, the hope for this is to provide something that is a stable funding for these programs. What really these programs do is depend on this money a great deal to do a wide variety of things. This funding, for instance, I can speak to Ute, which is in my district. This funding helps them to provide classes in our region for such things as dental assistant training, for such things as CDL licensing, for programs that can be offered at an affordable rate so that they can partner with our regional corporations such as YKAC, such as AVCP, and have the training done in Bethel as opposed to making perhaps someone need to travel into Anchorage or another major urban center. That money very much is invaluable to helping them offset their costs, to helping them set budgets up so that they can plan these classes and plan these partnerships that sometimes are more than a year in advance. It takes time to make sure that you have the professionals hired to make sure that you can do these trainings. It takes time to look at the needs of what this is, and that's why a longer-term authorization would be very helpful to these programs so that they can start to analyze that. For instance, in my region, in a few years, we very well may have a large-scale gold mine coming on, so it will take time for the UNARVA to start to focus on getting our folks trained up so that they can go and they can take the jobs that mine will offer and the opportunity.
Madam Chair, if I can continue.
Senator Olson.
With all due respect, Representative Fansler, I've worked with TVA for a long period of time, so I'm not asking what they do. I'm asking why it was brought down to 1 year, because here's what I see. The concern is that, well, a year from now, we're going to be in the same type of situation where we're at the end of the session, we've got lots of things going on, got budgets to go ahead and take care of, and we're dealing with something that was extended for a year. Why not keep it at 5 years? That's my real question. If there's an issue of reporting, what's 1 year of reporting going to go ahead and do as far as trying to fix the situation? That's what I was asking about. If you don't know the answer to that question, I realize you're maybe not in favor of that. That was my real question. But I just see that this is a situation where I don't want to be a year here a year from now. We've got bigger things on our plate than a one-year extension. No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Hughes, I don't want to put you on the spot. I know you were on the Labor and Commerce Committee. Could you provide us any committee insight on the one-year extension versus something longer?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that. First, I want to say that I applaud the work that the sites are doing and the great job training, and we did, you pointed to us to the percentage of those that are employed, and part of that we saw that some had high up around 83%, but then we also saw some that were very low at 32%, and the cost per student was very varied. And again, as Representative Fansler said, it was apples to oranges and very difficult to compare. And we felt like that the idea was not that the program would just go 1 year, but that there'd be consideration given to come back in January with recommendations of how to make sure these dollars are being well spent. These are dollars coming out of every wage earner's checks through unemployment as part of that unemployment insurance. It's a percentage of that. And the idea is we want those dollars to go into assisting students to prepare them for needed jobs. And we noticed a large portion was going into office training, students learning how to use Microsoft Word, and realizing that there was redundancy in some of those programs because those are available through the job center, the local community colleges, online. And is that really the best use of the dollars and the original intent of this program? We did learn that office training, as an example, does fall under technical vocational education. And if we want to keep that, that's fine, but it might be something we want to reconsider where these dollars would go to prepare students for heavy equipment, for welding, for the construction trades. And my understanding, that was the original intent. So the one-year change was not because we don't like the work that's being done, but we believe that it needs to be relooked at so that we are sure those dollars are really going for the original intent of the TVEP dollars, knowing that these are coming out of the money is actually coming out of Alaskans' paychecks. And so what I had spoken with the committee about, and the Labor and Commerce Committee seemed to be in agreement that some recommendations, perhaps from a working group, could, in a year, could set the parameters and have union representation on that working group, non-union representation, the department, the university, others who could come back, and we could really get this program on track and to the benefit of all the students interested in being prepared for their careers. And so that we just felt that there were some things that even though AWIB, this is their job to make sure it's on track, that perhaps it needed a little extra attention.
Thank you. Manager. Thank you for those comments, Senator Hughes. Senator Michicki.
So I'm hoping we can, if I could understand something on the reporting improvements, is there any reason we couldn't improve the reporting requirements while the training was occurring as normal? For Representative Fansler.
Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Senator Michicki, through the chair. There is no reason that we cannot improve the reporting requirements as this program is going on. So I think that this is something that can be done at a department level and through this task force. I think we can, look at many different aspects of this. We want to have the most efficient program possible, and there is nothing in this bill that prevents it if we would reauthorize it for more than 1 year, for 5 years, or for 3 years, or whatever we would reauthorize it for us to continue to make those efficiencies when it comes to reporting, when it comes to targeting the folks that are involved in these programs, when it comes to the programs that are being offered with this money. Really, this is just a straight reauthorization of the percentages that these 10 institutions are receiving.
Senator Michiki.
Well, there's some, I mean, there are competing interests in my district. I know that. But I've got to say, the cost of a piece of a legislation, there is one going through this building. We've got all these folks sitting around and all the processing and things that happen. So a year, like the senator from Gullivan said next to me, is a really short period of time. We will be back here. And I don't know what the other changes can occur in a year. So I hope this group can compromise. And you all know the true definition of compromise. I hope we can compromise on the length of effectiveness of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. What I'd like to do, if we don't have any more questions from the sponsor, is go into public hearing. I do have committee members that need to depart for another committee, so I will notify everyone that's sitting here today that we will be holding this bill. Amendments are due tomorrow at noon, so please, if you could submit your amendments to my staff by noon tomorrow, that would be helpful. With that, for members that need to leave, we are trying to bring back up Senate Bill 104. The department is working on a fiscal note, so we may take an at ease to wait for your return if we can get that back here to make it a quick coverage of the fiscal note, or we may wait till tomorrow morning. Just depends on the timing, or even later tonight after committee meetings. So we'll just see how that works out for the committee. Thank you, Mr. Fansler. Thank you, Mary. We are taking folks in order that they signed up. The first, I'd like to open the public hearing on the Senate CS for House Bill number 141, Labor and Commerce. The first person waiting to testify is Doug Walrath, the director of Northwest Alaska Technical Center out of Nome. Doug, welcome to Senate Finance. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, Doug Walrath, Director of NACTEC. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 141 and kindly request your consideration to adopt the House Bill language with a five-year sunset. Extending the sunset provides fiscal stability that permits latitude for multi-year workforce development planning and training. Single-year funding is less than ideal to advance effective training in rural Alaska, where leveraging partnership and resources is vitally important to continued success. Currently, NACTEC provides comprehensive annual reports, and we would be happy to work with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and other grantees to address reporting requirements viewed as less than sufficient in existing statute. From our own annual program evaluation measures, we are aware that 30% of last year's high school trainees were 12th grade students. So outcome measures such as employment or median wage 7 to 12 months after training neglect 70% of our trainees who are continuing with their education. Norton Sound Health Corporation, the largest employer in the Bering Straits region, comments regularly about the high percentage of village health aides who've completed NACTEC training. Putting high school students onto a healthcare career pathway has proven effective in our region to address this high demand, high turnover vocation. We just need a different measure to capture such successes. We avail ourselves at NACTEC to perhaps a future longitudinal measure, more accurately depicting the regional impact to addressing unemployment for the apples-to-apples sort of comparison legislators have requested. We're appreciative of TVEP funding and for the industry partnerships we've built as a result to expand vocational training across the Seward Peninsula. I thank you for your consideration of a five-year sunset for TVEP reauthorization, and certainly appreciate the efforts of all of you working through this Easter weekend. Thank you.
Doug, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go to Bethel. Dennis Nishon. Beth, in Bethel, are you there?
I am. Can you folks hear me okay?
We can. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. Thank you to Madam Chair and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Dennis Tashan. I'm the Executive Director of Utlet Nulivat in Bethel, Alaska. Quickly, I would like to speak to House Bill 141, the TVEP reauthorization. A one-year sunset would have a very negative to devastational impact on rural training centers for planning purposes throughout the state. We're currently right now in the process of transferring and starting a new A&P school, which would be an 18-month program. And with a one-year sunset, that would really put those students in limbo being halfway through a program when that were to sunset. Other long-term trainings that we have that are employer-driven that could be significantly impacted would be our 6-week certified nursing assistant program, our 6-week CDL, commercial driver's license program, the 2-year DHAT, which is dental health aid therapy program that we house, and our 60-day structural welding, to name a few. Utlet Nulivat does perform vocational technical training, and this long-term funding source helps us and allows us to do so. In closing, I would just ask the committee to move the bill forward in its original 5-year sunset form until 2022. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move over to King Salmon and ask Annette Caruso from Southwest Alaska Vocational Education Center. Welcome to Senate Finance, Annette.
Thank you, Madam Chair McKinnon and Co-Chair Hoffman and committee members. My name is Annette Caruso, Co-Executive Director of Southwest Alaska Vocation and Education Center. I'm also here with Co-Executive Director Anisha Elby. We respectfully ask for your support of House Bill 141 for a 5-year reauthorization. SAVIC received 3% TVIP. Reauthorization for 5 years means our center has stable funding. We provide employer-driven training that has direct impact on the local and Alaska economy. We at SAVIC share your own guiding principles of preparing Alaskans for Alaskan jobs and providing vocational education that is tied to the workforce. Our trainees are allowed to stay in the region to attend training. The Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation has named SAVIC as its preferred training center, which translates into providing money for just SAVIC training that will be related to fishing and support industry. At SAVIC, we provide workforce training through strong partnership funding, including 3% TVEP and local contributions made from the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, Bristol Bay Native Association, Bristol Bay Borough, Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and the Bristol Bay Housing Authority. We could not provide training without 3% TVEP. Please reauthorize for 5 years as in original House Bill 141. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you, Annette, for testifying before Senate Finance today. Are there questions from committee members? The next person waiting to testify is Pearl Brower from Barrow. Pearl, are you there?
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. For the record, my name is Dr. Pearl Brower, and I serve as president of Elisakovic College. I want to be very brief. I think Doug really summed it up well, and I just want to note that we are 100% supportive of the 5-year extension due to planning, preparation, and really being able to take advantage of these funds. I recognize there are some issues and concerns with reporting, and we are on board to have some discussions about that, but it would be really great to be able to allow us to do the great work that we're doing and extend for a 5-year period. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pearl. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, moving down to Fairbanks, Fred Villa. Fred, are you there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Fred Billy. I'm Associate Vice President with the University of Alaska Workforce Programs, and I would like to speak on behalf of in support of the original version of HB 141, the TVEP reauthorization. The TVEP annual report to the legislature gives the legislature an opportunity to look at the performance of the program going forward. It certainly is, it allows for the measuring of economic impact on families, communities, and regions is sustained over time. And one other point is that for the state of Alaska to have 65% of its workforce by 2025 with some post-secondary education or training, it'll allow that investment in our workforce development system to encourage business confidence and in our workforce development capacities. We certainly are open to participating in any changes, measurements, or metrics that would be revised to help better inform the state and the legislature on the performance of TVEP. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Fred, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. Questions?
Thank you.
The next person waiting to testify is Cheryl Edensaw from Kotzebue. Cheryl, welcome to Senate Finance. Cheryl, are you there?
Oh, hello? Can you hear me now?
We can. If you could state your name for the record and the affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Cheryl Edenshaw. I'm the director of the Alaska Technical Center here in Kotzebue. I'm also testifying in favor of reauthorization of the TVEP for a five-year term. It's critical, and others have stated it much better than I can right now for planning purposes. Without that stable funding source, we would not be in a position to maintain our long-term commitment to meet employers' needs, not only on a local level but statewide. And I believe that we're able to provide training necessary for the jobs, and I'm going to emphasize jobs and healthcare resource development, process technology, culinary arts, and construction trades without the TVET funding training opportunities for Alaskans, which our training is aligned with job opportunities, not just for our region, but throughout our state. I respectfully ask for your support to reauthorize TVET for a five-year term.
Cheryl, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person waiting off-net and online to testify is Joey Crum from Anchorage. Joey, welcome to Senate Finance.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the time. For the record, my name is Joey Crum. I'm the president and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. I'm also the chair of the Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Education, though I am testifying on behalf of myself today, which to make that very clear. I am a huge supporter and proponent of post-secondary education, particularly vocational. And I've had the pleasure and the opportunity to work and partner with over the years several of the TVEP recipients, but I'm calling today because I would like to say that the Senate over the past couple of years, in my opinion, has done a really good job of requiring accountability with public dollars. Basically, you've established expectations to be met as a condition of state support. I'm testifying to ask you to apply that rationale to HB 141, which reauthorizes the TVEP program. The TVEP money gives money to institutions, but it does not require performance standards. We keep hearing about the inconsistency in the reports, and those are true. The real problem with this program is there are no stated expectations. We don't know what the target graduation is, the target income levels, and we don't measure the employment in the areas of training, which is the true measure of a program efficacy. There is not even a clearly stated expectation that the money be spent on the students receiving instruction. I know we're talking about House Bill 141, but comparably, SB 103 proposes eliminating the performance scholarship in part because it is not meeting expectations. I would ask that we apply the same reasoning in regards to TEVA. I understand that schools want dedicated funding sources for as long as they can get it. That makes good business sense. How can we say that we are supporting Alaskans when we fund a program that has no defined goals of achievement nor measures that are in place that allow us to go apples to apples comparisons? I urge this committee to keep the version passed unopposed out of Senate Labor and Commerce so that we can establish standards and ensure that we are supporting the end users, the individuals, and not the individual institutions. I would thank you for your time.
Joey, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, the next person waiting to testify from Seward, Kathy LeCompte. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. For the record, I'm Kathy LeCompte. I'm the director of the Alaska Vocational Technical Center in Seward, Alaska, and I'm just calling to encourage the original bill at 5 years and to let you know that ABTEC's budget, 14% of our budget is from TVEP funding, and we are happy to be a part of the conversation to talk about measurable accountability practices and reporting requirements. I can tell you that we have a 90% completion rate, and over 90% of our students are employed in the work that they have trained for after graduating from our programs at ABTEC. That completes my testimony. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Kathy. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone off-net or online or in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 141? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. I'd like to invite Department of Labor, Greg Cashin, and Paloma Harbor, the Director of Administrative Service, Department of Labor, to the microphone. Thank you, Senator Bishop.
Oops.
If you can identify yourselves for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Greg Cashin. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Good afternoon, Chair McKinnon and committee members. I'm Paloma Harbor. I'm the Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Thank you for waiting for this bill and staying with us. Mr. Cashin, could you please address the concerns that you've heard at the table in the one-year extension versus more-year extension?
Madam Chair, from the department's perspective, we think an extension of more than 1 year would allow stability in the program and also allow the Workforce Investment Board to take a look at the performance measures that there's some concerns about that are currently in the statute, which have been in the statute for several years.
Is it true that there is about $12.5 million that is distributed between these particular programs? Ms. Harbor.
Thank you. For the record, Chair McKinnon, yes, that is correct.
Yes, thank you.
That's an average cost in fiscal year 2016 of $1,215 per student, which is actually a very affordable training program.
Ms. Harbor, what percentage is that of the unemployment contributions overall? I know the percentages that break out.
Thank you. Chair McKinnon, I have some information on that, if I could have just a second to find it.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record, Senate Finance. Ms. Harbor, I asked of the total amount collected by the state of Alaska on unemployment insurance, what is that number? And then I'm looking for the percentage that goes directly to TVAC.
Okay. So I'm going to try to answer this question. The employee's contribution, or the contribution that the employee makes into the technical and vocational education program, is 0.16% of their taxable wage base, which is a maximum of $63.84 in 2017 per employee. As far as the percentage that is of overall collections in 2017, let me do some math real quick. 0.74 divided by 2.9. It's about 11% of total unemployment insurance contributions from employers and employees in 2017.
Thank you. Are there additional questions from committee members for the department? There was an issue raised that there is currently no expectations or definable goals for these programs. Do you have a comment on that? Mr. Cashin.
Madam Chair, in the statute, actually those are the reporting requirements. Do you have a ticket?
Ms. Harbor.
Thank you. Chair McKinnon, there are statutory requirements for reporting performance of the program. What we have looked at is the fact that some of the performance measures were implemented when the program was first established, and they were mostly based on what was being required to report for other federal programs, and in our review, we're thinking that it doesn't necessarily fit the program very well. Obviously, we've seen, and the TVEP report shows the effectiveness of the program in areas. NACTEC has shown a proven impact on graduation rates in their region. Galena helps students through their articulation agreements have a step up in going to the university. So there's other ways that we can look at measuring the effectiveness of the program, and so we are the department has committed to working with the Workforce Investment Board to identify what those other effectiveness measures may be.
Ms. Harbor, does the Workforce Investment Board, have they identified educational training opportunities throughout the state and provided a master list?
You want to take that?
Okay. Mr. Cashin.
Madam Chair, I believe you might be referring to the eligible training providers list, which lists all the training providers in the state that may receive funding. Is that what?
It's not just that. It's not just that have funding. We have training opportunities available in multiple regions around the state, and I'm wondering if you have ever gotten together, both from state-funded programs to all programs in the state and regions that are offering training, to see if we're duplicating services by providing additional state money.
Chair McKinnon, I know that the Workforce Investment Board does outline areas of high-demand occupations and high-demand industries and priority industries to invest in training, and they do a review to see what is the workforce demand. What is our training capacity, and where are there gaps? And right now, we are not adequately meeting the training needs across our state. But as far as program-by-program review, I don't believe they've done that.
Thank you, Ms. Harbor. The issue is that the department has never quantified private sources that are offering training, and then we're layering other training programs in similar areas across that. So I'll speak with the department afterwards.
Okay.
Is there any additional questions on TVAC funding? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's along the same line as that. As I look down the list of the entities that are getting TVAC funding, they seem to be schools and essentially nonprofit entities that are out there. Are there any for-profit corporations that provide training that are currently getting TVIP or have applications to get TVIP? funding?
So, through the chair, Senator Olson, TVEP funding goes to the entities identified in statute, which are all public, not-for-profit entities. There is not an ability to apply for those funds. There is the state training and employment program, which does go out competitively based on grant applications, and there are private for-profit entities that apply for funding through that program. So that is our competitive grant program.
Senator Olson.
Clarification, Madam Chair. So that would allow private corporations to go ahead and get TVEP funding?
Not TVEP, STEP. Oh, STEP. It's a different program. Mm-hmm.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. As a side note, could you provide me the list of the recipients of the STEP grant program?
We can. We do have that with us.
Senator Bishop.
Ma'am, if you don't mind, along that same request, I want to know all the, I'd like to know all the ITA recipients and the amounts they have received.
Okay, that'll take us a little longer, but we can get that.
Excuse me, ma'am. Individual training counts.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Hoffman.
Yes, and can we also get information regarding what areas of the state by region have the highest unemployment rates?
We certainly can get that as well.
I think we have those numbers from Labor and Commerce. Any other questions? With that, again, I'll restate. Would you like, we have a fiscal note that will have to be corrected as we take up the issue of 1 year or multiple years or 5 years as the sponsor has requested. Ms. Lucky, can you brief at ease? Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance. Can you brief at ease? We're back on the record. Ms. Lucky, could you cover the fiscal notes? We do have some fiscal notes en route to us on this bill.
Certainly, thank you. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky. I'm staff to Senator McKinnon, and I apologize that this committee did not have fiscal notes. Unfortunately, they were not updated to reflect the Senate Labor and Commerce CS, and so we're waiting for them forthcoming. However, the amount in the fiscal note is the same every year, and so we will provide them for informational purposes. With the caveat that only FY18 is applicable to the CS that came in front of you. There are five fiscal notes that apply. Fiscal note number one, the department is Department of Education and Early Development. Appropriation is teaching and learning support. Allocation, student and school achievement. OMB component number 2796. And the amount is $478,800 included in the governor's request. Funding sources VOTEC, ED, DGF, number 1151. And that funding source will remain constant throughout all of the fiscal notes. The other fiscal note that is fiscal note number 4. The department is University of Alaska. The appropriation is University of Alaska. The allocation is budget reductions, additions system-wide. OMB component number 1296. The amount is $5,386,600 annually. Again, it's DGF. The source code is 1151. Fiscal number 5, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Employment and Training Services. The allocation is Workforce Development. OMB component number 3117. The amount is $4,210,100. Fiscal note number 6, the department is Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Appropriation is the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. The allocation is the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. OMB component number 2686. The amount is $2,034,000. The last fiscal note is fiscal note 7, department is Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The appropriation is Employment and Training Services. The allocation is Unemployment Insurance, OMB component number 2276. The amount is $408,900. Again, these fiscal notes will be updated. The amount is the same throughout the fiscal years. It will depend on how many years the grant program is extended.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? And as we said, depending on if the one-year date stands, those numbers would be replicated in out years for how many ever years the bill would pass out here. Senator Michiki, questions? Again, amendments are due tomorrow by noon. With that, is there anything else to come before the committee? Oh, thank you, Senator Bishop. Brief at ease while we find out if 103's fiscal note is available. We're back on the record. We're going to tomorrow. I just want to make an announcement. Tomorrow at 9 a.m. and at 2 p.m. we have a joint meeting notice with the Resource Committee and the Senate Finance Committee. Senate Resources and Senate Finance will be meeting on HB 111, oil and gas production tax payments and credits. So I just wanted to put that on the record. We're going to stand in recess, hoping that we receive a fiscal note shortly. In recess. We're back on the record. Senate Finance. If I could direct committee members' attention to Senate Bill 104 as amended. /J is the version before us. It's an act relating to the duties of the State Board of Education and Early Development and relating to school curriculum. We were waiting for an amended fiscal note. We have that amended fiscal note. It's been distributed. Paul Prusing. Paul, are you there? Or Heidi Tischner, could you cover the fiscal note for us?
Yes. For the record, this is Paul Prusing. I'm the Acting Director for the Division of Student Learning. And this fiscal note is, the revised fiscal note includes three staff, one math specialist, one language arts specialist, and then an associate three. And for that first year, we have a one-time cost of consultants to help us with the review process. And those consultants, there would be one for math, one K-5, one 6-8 consultant, and one high school consultant. And for language arts, there would be the same, so there would be a total of six consultants to help the department establish a thorough review process for curriculum. And they would work side by side the education specialists and get them well trained on the review process, so in upcoming years those specialists would have the knowledge and background to assist districts in reviewing and approving curriculum and also keep the school state board informed of curriculum changes and reviews. So that is the result of the fiscal note.
Mr. Prusing, I can support the three staff folks to support curriculum in the department, but I'm having trouble with $1 million for contract services. So can you help define those numbers further?
Sure, Madam Chair. It's just been my experience in working with education consultants over the years that they're not cheap. For one, I think that number is 160 for one consultant is, I think, on par with the going rate, if you will. And also, I think there's quite a bit difference in the curriculum. I mean, a high school math specialist doesn't have really necessarily the expertise to review and approve a K-5 math curriculum. They're significantly different. And the same thing with a middle school curriculum. So that one-time contracts for the assisting the state in the review process for the state board to ensure that it is thorough and break it down by those grade spans, I think is would be an important aspect of creating this process.
Mr. Prusing, is this supporting your Alaska challenge or the bill before us?
It's based solely on the bill before us.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Two items that we were discussing while we were off the record with our legislative finance is that the department cannot recognize, the department cannot suggest using a higher education fund. The legislature certainly can. The department should have requested the funding source as UGF 1004. The department has been working with my office to look at use of the Alaska Innovation Education Grant Fund if we're successful in renaming that fund and assisting the department in providing additional support for K through 12 from those dollars as they are available. So I'm not going to change the fiscal note, but I just want to point out the departments don't get to select when a bill doesn't address that particular it doesn't address the Alaska Performance Scholarship, so it would be us as a legislative body that would change that to the higher ed fund. So consider that done. That is the conversation that we've had. But we do have a series of bills in the queue that we hope will pass and will support K through 12 education. With that, I would like to discuss the service line. I know that the department believes that they need almost $1 million to review the curriculum that's already adopted by five school districts. And I guess that's not what they're articulating. They're saying they need $992,800 to hire consultants to look at grade level curriculum for math and language arts. I'd be happy to work with the department as this bill moves through the process, but with the support of the committee in FY18, I would like to strike the $992,800 down to $500,000. Is there objections to amending the fiscal note? So the total in FY19 would be $828,800. The department does note that regulations will have to be changed. Is there any additional questions on the fiscal note? Are we ready to move the bill? Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 104, version 30-LS0786/J as amended from committee with the aforementioned fiscal note that we just went over in committee recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 104 as amended, an act relating to the duties of the State Board of Education and Early Development and relating to school curriculum, /J amended? Seeing and hearing none, the bill moves from committee. Is there anything else to come before the committee? On Saturday at 9 a.m., we have the joint Senate Finance with Senate Resources, where Rich Ruggiero is a consultant that will be briefing us. At 11 a.m., there will be a floor session. At 1 p.m., we'll have Senate Finance, where we hope to take up HB 141, Alaska Workers' Comp, VOCED. SB 104 has been moved from committee, and we would take up HB 23, Survivor Benefits. At 2 p.m., we are scheduled for a joint Senate Finance Committee meeting with Senate Resources, and we'll hear from Roger Marks, our consultant. Anything else to come before the committee? With that, Senator Hoffman.
Do you have a tentative schedule for Sunday?
We don't at this time.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman and members of the committee, we are trying to lighten the load on Sunday. I know that we have a floor session scheduled. We have a Senate Finance Committee scheduled at 9. That will be delayed to the call of the chair till after the floor session, depending on if we receive a bill that is called from our committee in some way that is urgent to get across the floor. So it will be more of a backstop meeting. With that, we're adjourned.